Dan here, Stead.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, Stead.
Hello.
Right, that music can only mean one thing. It is time once again for the worst 90 minutes in sports. That's right, it's the Two Guys Soccer Show. But given current circumstances, we have to pull it together today and actually try and be decent. I'm not going to say good. We're just going to aim high and go for decent. As always, we are brought to you by Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland. Maryland, D.C., and Virginia's premier venue for live sports and entertainment. And I am joined tonight by my partner in crime, as always, Mr. Armstead. How you doing this evening?
I'm doing well, man. It has been too long. So thanks for bearing with me for my recent little bit under the weather and just, you know, trying to get back on track with general life circumstances, but I've been really excited to get back and chat. I hope you're on the mend, my buddy. How's your shoulder doing?
Much better. I had to miss the last couple of shows myself because I sprained an AC joint in my shoulder last week, moving some boxes around. And if anybody's ever done that, you know, it gets really painful to even think. So, and we're joined by our guest tonight, one of our favorites, as always, Coach G. How you doing this evening, sir?
What's going on, gentlemen? How are we doing tonight?
So, as I alluded to, we kind of got to kick it off one way. We got to try and be better than our normally bad selves because it is a different sort of day. You know, there was a lot of soccer this weekend, and hopefully we'll get to talk a little bit about it. But events that unfolded yesterday afternoon supersede sports, as we learned of the death of Kobe Bryant and eight others, including his 13-year-old daughter Gigi, in a helicopter crash in California. And it seems wrong to try and do this show without at least talking a little bit about Kobe's passing. You know, the tie is simple. We all know Kobe grew up over in Italy. He was a huge soccer fan, big fan, grew up rooting for AC Milan. He was a big AC Milan supporter. He was a very big fan of Lionel Messi in Barcelona. I can remember back in, I believe it was the 2010 Olympics, his first, when they asked him, or the 2008 Beijing Games, his first Olympics, they asked him, you know, what athlete are you really excited to meet? And he said Lionel Messi. He really wanted to meet Messi, who was playing for the Argentinian team. And somehow during the opening ceremonies, they made it happen that Kobe Bryant ran into Lionel Messi. And I know that the two got to be friends because there were plenty of tributes from Barcelona players, past and present, over the last couple of days, showing pictures that he had taken at training. You know, Kobe Bryant and Andres Iniesta trading jerseys. We saw Neymar's tribute after he knocked in the penalty. Cristiano Ronaldo offering some words. Mm-hmm. And Sergio Ramos wearing the Kobe jersey at Real Madrid training. Hey, so it seems wrong. If Kobe can transcend the divide between Real Madrid and Barcelona, you know that's when you've really transcended sport, right? Or at least the sport that you've played. When you've got both teams and both sets of fans supporting you, especially when it's pretty well known that you are a supporter of the other side. You know, he recently talked at length about the problems facing Barcelona and commenting on the coaching change and how they were going through a transition period. So he kept up with it. He was a big fan. So It was a long day, an interesting one, kind of. It hit hard, and I've been trying to figure out why. And I know for me, you know, I grew up in the Philadelphia area. I got to see him play from the time he was in high school all through his career. And even though I wasn't exactly a Kobe fan, you know, I'm a Sixers fan. He famously told us that he was going to rip our guts out in the NBA Finals, and we booed him mercilessly for years. He never got over that. He was kind of like the first player of that stature my age who has been suddenly taken it. And it was meaningful, and it kind of left this hole in that respect. So I just want to get your guys' thoughts. So how are you feeling about this all, Stead?
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, it's one of those things that you're going to remember where you were when you found out, you know. And I think speaking about kind of like our generation, and he was kind of like, I know when I was, Kobe Bryant is actually exactly one day older than me. So I've always kind of like tracked his particular, his growth in his career, as well as his success and everything. And kind of as alluded to, this would be considered the prototypical athletic successful person that is, that's kind of like who I grew up with at the same time, and watching him as a, you know, I'm a freshman in college and watching him, you know, do the slam dunk contest and stuff like that. So I was also never quite a fan, because I probably also because I was just never the biggest basketball player, or I didn't watch a lot of basketball. But of course, athletes that are under the microscope the way he was from the beginning, I thought that he was extraordinarily poised, even when he was going through his various, you know, missteps that young, and I don't even want to say young athlete, because that's not exactly true. It's just young people just make mistakes. And granted, he had to grow up pretty quickly, and he got married and had children very young. And so a lot of times you have to wonder, was he mature enough to handle all that pressure? And to see how he came out the other side as someone who recently, of course, you know, won an Oscar for a short animation film he was a part of. And it's tragic. And I really feel for, you know, not just his family, but the families of the other seven victims who were, it sounds like they were acquaintances and friends of him and his family and his child. So you have to kind of wonder how this is going to hit the NBA, especially. Mike, you just said he's kind of like, of this particular generational of transcendent athlete, he's the first one that was gone too soon. So I'm pretty sure that the Hall of Fame is going to do the right thing and have a very quick and wing part developed for him. And he should get recognized as quickly and as often as possible for his contributions to the game. Even if he did play for a team that my sister really, really liked, but one that I loathed. So, it's one of those things that you can't really put too many words to. It's like you hate saying it, but these things just happen, and it's just a shame that when, as we get farther and farther along in our technology and things have become very safe, there are still tragedies that are sometimes unavoidable.
Before I get to Coach G on this, I want to respond to something really quickly said, because it made me think of this. I was talking to one of my youngsters today, who's in seventh grade, and he pointed out to me that Kobe was their Jordan. You know, for the guys who are rookies in the NBA and younger, you got to think about this. They never saw Michael Jordan play live. He had retired in 1998. You know, Zion Williamson wasn't even born until Kobe was winning his first championship, or second championship. So they never saw Michael Jordan play. They grew up wanting to be Kobe. He was that bridge in between Michael and LeBron James. And for a generation, they never saw Michael play live. They're not going to be able to remember seeing Magic play live. But who they did see play, you know, in person, on TV, whatever, was Kobe. And so
But Mike, it reminds me of when we were kids and we would shoot a basketball, we would all yell Jordan. And then all the kids that are like our little ones, they all yell Kobe.
Man, you guys are looking at my notes right now.
Yeah, so go ahead. Chime in.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I wanted to say, too, like even my students in high school, every time they shoot a basket, which I know they're always going to miss, they always say Kobe. Like, it's so this guy was so entrenched in our pop culture, just in our culture, you know, altogether. It's a huge loss for all sports, you know, especially him growing up in Italy and being at AC Milan. Like you said, like he's a big fan of Barca. But even here in America, he would go to soccer games and wear the uniforms and really talk about soccer, where a lot of these big, huge professionals, even like Jordan, didn't really promote any other sport, really. So, you know, he was kind of an ambassador for both sports. And, like, again, you never really heard a basketball player talk about soccer. It's always football or something else. So, maybe he had a couple percentage points of making soccer popular here in America, but definitely he was definitely a spokesman. And, you know, I kind of was thinking about Roberto Clemente and how, yeah, he's not even as close at the level of, you know, an athlete as Kobe was or is. But like how he passed away and how big his passing away was when he's trying to go down to the Caribbean to help out with relief, and how his plane fell and got into a crash and he died, how a big, huge hole left even in Pittsburgh, and just what a great, you know, humanitarian this guy was. And same with Kobe, you know, yeah, he had a very young, rough NBA career, especially when the stuff was happening in Colorado and stuff like that. But again, when you're 18, 19 years old in a man's game and you got thrown millions of dollars, you know, how would we react too? But watching him, and again, he's our age too. I'm 41, and just watching him from when I was 18, what I was doing in life, what he was doing, the guy was unbelievable. And I'm from Chicago, and you know, I'm always gonna have the Michael Jordan, you know, on my side kind of thing. But like you said, Kobe is Michael Jordan for this generation. This guy, you know, inside out, you see his uniforms everywhere. Kids still talk about him. For me, it's gonna hit me differently. Kind of like what you said. Like I'm not a huge, was not really a big basketball fan, but but Kobe was a huge, huge basketball player and just an athlete throughout the world. And even watching all the news today, international tennis tournaments, people are wearing his uniforms. People in China, like everywhere, is mourning this loss. It's not just here in America or not in Europe, but. This was a big, huge loss just overall. What a great athlete he was and the records he put up in such a young age. And he left, you know, the game maybe a couple years too early, but his body was shut down just because he gave everything to the game and to the sport. He was definitely driven. He made a lot of people around him that much better. So it was a loss for basketball, and also I think it was a loss for soccer as well. It's, like I said, kind of like an ambassador to our sport.
He opted to wear the number 10 when he played for USA Soccer because number 10 is basketball. USA Basketball. I'm sorry, I was going to say that because he opted to wear FIBA rules for international basketball dictate that you can only have numbers 1 through 15 on the team, so he could have worn 8. That was the number that he was associated with. That was his first number. It's one of two numbers that he had retired with the Lakers. But when he got on national duty with the Olympics, he wore number 10 because the number 10 on a national soccer team is your best player or your best attacking player. And he knew that. And that was why he opted to. He wore it because Messi wore it. He wore it because Pelé wore it. He wore it because even Landon Donovan wore it. And he admitted, like, that was why he made that decision. So it's not – he's not playing lip service. Like, he was a big soccer fan. And in a way, he did make it cool for kids who wouldn't normally watch soccer to be okay watching soccer. You know, he wasn't your typical NBA story growing up in Italy. He spoke 4 languages. You know, when he did meet Messi, they spoke in Spanish. So, like, he was an ambassador for the game. He loved it. He talked about it passionately. Like you said, he wasn't perfect. We can talk about the off-field incidents in Colorado and acknowledge like what may or may not have happened there. There was certainly a civil settlement, some admission on his part that some stuff happened, but he grew from that experience. The homophobic rant at the ref that he was fined for. Later in life, I guess having daughters will do that to you. He became an ambassador for women's basketball and certainly big promoting those games. He was on his way to coach a women's basketball tournament. He coached his girls, and you know there was a picture of him after his girls' team beat a team that had beat them by 1 point. He ran up the score, which leads me to this almost like comically maniacal obsession with competition and a certain like almost comically maniacal obsession with Michael Jordan. It went above and beyond just like I want to be the best. It's like he modeled everything about himself down to the I'm a select number 24 because I want to be one over Jordan. It was funny at times. It felt comical. It felt put on. It felt like, come on, man. But that was what motivated him. He had that singular obsession with basketball. That was what he did. And I think what was even harder was he seemed to be having a good time in retirement. We look at players.
Yeah.
Some of them enjoy retirement. You know, you look at Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal. They seem to be having a good time. But then you look at Michael, who he patterned his life after. There's, you know, Michael seems like he's miserable in retirement. Like he just doesn't know what to do with himself. He can't find that outlet for that competitive drive anymore. Kobe was putting it into producing and doing other things outside and trying to be the best, coaching his daughters and stuff, and being involved in basketball and training young players and mentoring people and stuff and other things like that, whereas you look at Michael and he just seems like he just doesn't know what to do with himself. And I think that's kind of one of the hardest things. I remember growing up in high school and in the summer, like going down to the schoolyards in Philadelphia and watching him play street ball against, you know, like guys like Richard Hamilton and Rasheed Wallace. So growing up and then having that.
That's crazy.
Fun. Yeah, like you just didn't think that this was going to happen all those times. And, you know, he, like I said, I certainly wasn't a big Lakers fan or a big Kobe fan. I can remember the scenes when they played the when it was when the Sixers won the Eastern Conference Finals and were going to the 2001 NBA Championship down on South Street in Philadelphia. And the guy who decided that he wanted to wear the Kobe Bryant jersey out and how poorly that went for him that night. But, you see the tributes pouring in, and they're all well-deserved. We have lost an icon. And you can see it in the faces and the expressions and the – when – Leo Messi starts off his Instagram post by saying, like, I have no words. You know that they and I think in Messi, he found a sort of kindred spirit, somebody who's just, like, maniacally obsessed with being the best at their game. And I know that Messi appreciated meeting him as much as he appreciated Messi. I would have loved to have been part of that conversation.
Yeah, without a doubt. It just seems like the best superstars of all sports always gravitate toward each other and find commonality as well as a drive to be, even be better than, you know, Messi, like compared to Kobe and stuff like that. But they always have the competition, but such ultimate respect for each one of them when they talk. And that's why, like you said, Messi had no comment. Like, what can you say when a really good, you know, friend of yours passed away and how much he meant to you and to the sport and everything? You know, left a lot of people speechless, man. It really did.
And so you'll see, like you said, Stead, you'll see all the tributes. The Mavericks already announced that they're not going to – they're going to retire the number 24. I think that's one of those things that you leave up to a team to do. He was – I'm – I feel various ways about that. You know, that's Mark Cuban's decision. You might have a player who says, like, I want to wear number 24. I want to honor him. He played for one team his whole entire career.
Right, exactly.
It's not like I might feel some sort of way if all of a sudden the 76ers retired the number 24, which they may do.
Yeah.
You know, he was a local boy.
I have to agree with you, Mike, though. I'm not sure how much I agree with league-wide things of this nature due to tragedy, you know, because, you know, you can't liken it to something like Jackie Robinson's number has been retired throughout Major League Baseball. Well, that was a bit more of an impactful player than Kobe Bryant, because, like, you know, it's kind of funny. It's like timing right now. It's kind of impossible to have that impact again in the United States, unless there's a woman who actually could be a successful NBA player. So I'm not really, I agree with you there. And I think with what's happening in LA with the Clippers and the Lakers postpone their game, just to kind of like let things, I don't want to say let things settle. That's not the right way to say it, but to just kind of show their respects for the club in a way. And so the Clippers can show respect for the Lakers, and it's in the city of LA. But
do you think Kobe,
something that's up to the individual teams to do so.
Do you think Kobe would be like, nah, you know, cancel the game? I think he would say, no, play the game. Like, it's basketball, the love of the sport. Like, let the people enjoy the sport. You know, like, you'll celebrate me whenever, you know, but, like, play the sport. I think he'd be actually kind of ticked off that they actually canceled the game tomorrow night about that.
Especially
being in L.A., and both teams are L.A.
Melo said that, too. Melo said that Kobe would want us to play.
I think he would want them to play, and I think he would be like, yo, go out and play. But at the same time, you got to look at 30 guys that actually have to go out there and do that,
and
especially the Lakers organization. You know, how up for playing and giving him the sort of tribute that he deserves are they? Are they in the right headspace right now? You saw how LeBron James reacted on the tarmac of LAX after finding out.
Mm-hmm.
Are those guys in the right place where they can go out and give the kind of show that would be fitting? We saw, DeMar DeRozan and Trae Young, the Atlanta Hawks. They somehow managed to each score exactly 24 points and combine for 81 shots. Now, that's a fluke, but that's kind of a really cool tribute when you think about it. But is LeBron James in a position right now where he's in a place where he could do that? Or is the Clippers organization, is the Lakers organization? This was one of their own. And I can understand the whole entire, like, hey, we should go out and play. The game needs to go on. He would want us to play.
Mm-hmm.
He would want us to go out and win. But on the same time, I also understand, you know, let's give it a day. Let's grieve. Let's get it out so that when it does come time for us to actually do this, we're able to really, really do it right.
We're able to focus.
Rather than trying to throw together something when our hearts and our minds really aren't in it. And my suspicion is when this game is played, at some point in the season, you're going to see something special. And I think that's the most fitting tribute that they can pay him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think about that a lot too, I think that's something that it's something that fans need to remember, is that, you know, these are just dudes playing sports, and things that could be going on off the court or off the field can really affect the way they are. I mean, I can recall, you know, I have a 3-month-old now daughter, and, you know, I had a really rough day at work today because she decided not to sleep last night. You know what I mean? So we have to always remember that the external circumstances can really affect their performance. And something like this, where this is someone that was very involved with a lot of players who are still actively playing, is definitely going to put a damper on their ability to play. And I think it should be expected that it's going to be challenging.
And I think that's what bringing it back around, something that you said, you got to remember that these are just men of various ages playing a game for entertainment. Mm-hmm. Now, do they have extraordinary ability at it? Yes. But they're still humans.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that goes back to what we were talking about. One of the things that made Kobe endearing in a way was his humanity. He was fallible.
Mm-hmm.
He had extraordinary talent and gifts that most people don't have and a singular drive to capitalize on. But he was fallible. He was not a god. He was fallible. He made mistakes. He made them. He repented for them. He seemed to grow from them. We can't honor him without acknowledging his fallibility. But in his fallibility, he was like us. He was human. He wasn't perfect. And he wasn't in that way that sort of mass-produced, contained, almost assembled, marketed in a way. Like, and I liken it to LeBron James in a way, where LeBron has come in a fully packaged, marketed, developed, put together human basketball product. You know, there really isn't anything. Everything with him is almost systematic.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually unusual yesterday to see the scenes of him getting off of the team plane on the tarmac and showing this emotion, because it's not something that you really associate with LeBron James, who's almost just always says the right thing, always does the right thing at the right time. Whereas Kobe, like, yeah, we had the stuff. You had the feud with Shaq, with him and Shaq. You had the things out in Colorado. You had the thing with the ref. You had that villainous mentality that he embraced with the whole Black Mamba referring to himself in the third person. Like I said, that it got to the point with that. The Mamba out thing was just comical. The throwing up the 50 shots to score the 60 points, you knew that he was going to do something like that in his last game.
Mm-hmm.
He's I'm going to get every shot that I got left. I got 40 minutes left of basketball. I can take 50 shots at least, and I'm going to get each and every last one of these NBA shots off.
You remember that game, too, where they were calling him a ball hog, and he only scored 8 points and took, like, 4 shots the whole game and just passed the whole time?
And he didn't take he didn't take a shot the whole time.
I thought
like,
that was great.
That was what I said. That's why I loved it.
That was great. I love
that. Was what I appreciated about him. He could be.
He was just thumbing his nose to everybody, man. I thought that was perfect. I loved it.
He could be petty.
Mm-hmm.
He could be petty like that. And so,
but he was that good to be petty, though.
Yeah, but it's you get that, and you got that sort of like it humanizes him in a way that we don't always see amongst athletes. He was a guy, an intelligent man with extraordinary athletic gifts, but he was still a man. He wasn't a god. And he worked on them, and he was fallible. And was he tough? Was he competitive? Was he all of that? Yes. But did he make mistakes along the way? Yeah. So, I guess the only thing to say to wrap that up from my point of view is just my thoughts and prayers and all of ours go out to his family, not just his wife and his daughter, but his parents, his sisters, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Coach G?
The only way you can put it.
Yeah, very much so. You know, like his, you know, the wife now is, you know, husbandless and a daughterless, and now she's got to raise, you know, I think the two other daughters on her own. It's a huge loss, even just for their family. Even a third. So, like, and all daughters too.
Yeah, little baby.
You know, and there's a special relationship between a daughter and the father, and now those girls won't have that. You know, and so on many different levels, it's a very tragic situation. And you know, my heart does go out for the family, and you know, especially for the girls and everyone who was involved, and the other families that are involved, and the pilot and stuff like that of the helicopter. It's just an unforeseen, just tragedy. You know, stuff like this happens a lot, and we would hopefully, when big stars like that kind of pass away, we kind of look in our own lives and stuff like that, and to see who's in our life and appreciate who's in our life, and you know, and tell them thank you very much, or hey, I love you, or you know, hey, I'm sorry about that petty little fight that we had the other week.
end of the day, it's not worth it. You know, we got to celebrate who's around us and cherish who's around us, because you just never know when the time is up. And, you know, everyone's clock is ticking. We just don't know when it's going to stop, kind of thing. We definitely appreciate who's around us when we have them. And just say thank you. You know, I love you. You know, even a guy to a guy, I say I love you and stuff like that. It's nothing wrong. Like I say, it's my best friend all the time. It's just, it's a different kind of person that you meet in your life that you just say, you know, I respect and I love and I'm thankful that you are in my life. So stuff like this kind of puts us back as humans, you know, going back to, we are, have all these feelings, stuff like that. We're not the only people that are hurting, but their family is hurting in a much different way for a very long time, rest of their life. So it's a tragedy all around. The world lost a really good person.
Stead.
I couldn't have said it better. I mean, I think most people have had some level of personal tragedy, and when that occurs, you should always look around and just hug your wife, you know, kiss your children, call your parents, things like that. And not that it's people say, well, it shouldn't take something like that for you to do those things, which is very true. But something like that can't have you just do them one extra time, which is also just as meaningful. And again, I don't want it to get lost to that the other people were on that plane or on that helicopter who also perished, and my heart goes out to their families as well.
So, we'll put a bow on that and move on. Before we do, I want to give a shout out again to our sponsor, Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, Bethesda, Maryland, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for live sports and entertainment. The Premier League is back this weekend after an FA Cup weekend break, so the perfect place to go down and catch this week's action. So, this is ostensibly a soccer show, so we'll turn our attention back to soccer and to the FA Cup, which was this weekend. The round of 32, as in Europe's oldest Open Cup competition. And surprisingly few upsets, although we did see one result that may have some potential reverberations down the line, and I want to get started with that one. Yes, in yesterday's last game, Shrewsbury drew Liverpool, came back from two goals down to draw Liverpool 2-2. So Liverpool's, I guess, winning run finally stops in England, although not in the Premier League. But the FA, the replay will be played in early February, and Jurgen Klopp came out and said that he would not be sending his first team because it was during the Premier League's new winter break, and he'd been told by the Premier League to observe it, so he was going to give the boys some time off. Not only would he not be fielding his first team, he himself was not even going to come to the game. I want to start by saying, how do we feel about the potential that Jurgen Klopp is throwing away a shot at the treble?
He's got bigger things to worry about, though.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
The Champions League and win the Premier. FA Cup is cute for him and whatnot, you know. But when he's going to have his, you know, U23 team play Shrewsbury at Anfield and stuff like that, it's his decision, you know. You can't blame the guy. He's mentally probably exhausted. He needs that time off as well. You know, it could be the biggest upset in Shrewsbury history, you know, beating Liverpool at Anfield. But again, he's got bigger things to worry about. And, you know, maybe resting the first team is probably the priority, because how many tournaments do they play in over the years? You know, continuously they're always playing. So have a little downtime, and not a big deal. You know, Champions League, they get that worldwide recognition for back-to-back. I think that's what he cares about, you know, preserving the guys as long as he can without injuries for a kind of a crappy cup, you know, for Liverpool, to be honest.
Yeah, I feel that you brought up a good point where you said that, you know, the Premier League said to give – this is supposed to be a break. And so I respect him for that. I also think that a treble is definitely an admirable, unbelievable accomplishment that any team can have. But I think from Liverpool's perspective, and what I hear from the team, they have not won a Premier League yet, and they have not won a league title in 30 years. And it's not – even though it's 99 out of 100 they're there, they don't have it yet. And, you know, you don't want to risk going out there on during a break where your players are supposed to be getting some time to recuperate and having one of them take a bad tackle. And then next thing you know, some of your starters are going to be injured in a game that is – you know, that you should have won previously already. You were up 2-0, and then you ended up giving up a draw. So I'm looking at it from a – I think of it as a Liverpool fan. I would say, look, I don't care about the FA Cup. I would even say I may not care as much about Champions League. We have not won a Premier League. We have not won the league. We have not won the league when previously we won the league 18 times. So if the focus remains on the Premier League, I don't see him getting too much backlash from Liverpool supporters as long as he brings home – that trophy, and I find it funny that these comments from Klopp came off right after you heard what Pep was saying about the League Cup and the Carabao Cup and how you know he shouldn't even have it anymore, and so you're seeing the support for some of these domestic cups starting to wane. I used to often hear Spurs fans, when Arsenal was winning the FA Cups recently, that nobody cares about the FA Cup. But you only heard that from Spurs fans after they were already knocked out of the tournament. So I agree with Klopp on this particular one, mainly because they have bigger fish to fry right now, and they're not quite done yet. Now, if they had already won two Premier Leagues, maybe they've won. Maybe if it was like a Manchester City situation where they won last year, and then I would say, hey, no, you should really push for it. But they're just now starting to win some domestic trophies again, and I think they need to really make sure they get that Premier League.
I can buy his argument against the replays. And after this is the last round anymore, going into the round of 16, they no longer have replays, which is a weird midweek game that just pops up on your fixture list and you have to play it. I give the FA credit for moving on from the unlimited replays. I can remember Arsenal a couple of years ago had so many replays that they were still playing a fifth round game when the tournament was into the next round. But I wonder if he didn't make a mistake by saying so quickly that this is what he was going to do. You know, when it was the Club World Cup and they had to play the fixture, he said initially, hey, we'll figure it out. And then he went and played the other team. And everybody was kind of like, okay, like, what are you going to do? This is the team that's on the paper. Not anything that we can do about it. By making this announcement so early, he gives the FA time to spur themselves into action, start complaining about the integrity of the cup and how, you know, Liverpool needs to field a legitimate team. Not that I think that they really have any recourse, because we have seen up and down the competition for years. Team fielding weakened sides against lower tier opposition, especially when they play them on the road. You know, we'll talk about Manchester United at Manchester United Tranmere in a little bit, but risking teams playing on fields like that in these smaller stadiums where they don't necessarily have the resources to keep up the field and keep it at the level, and you know, you end up playing on a mud track and you risk unnecessary injury. I've seen plenty of teams do that. You know, because I got two Arsenal fans, I can have a little bit of a go and remember a time when Manchester United beat Arsenal in an FA Cup match with eight defenders on the field. And actually scored goals. Like, they did not defend. But if he should have just waited. I feel kind of mixed on this one because the trouble is something, and they are in a special position right now where you have the opportunity to do something that no team has ever done. Fully cement yourself as possibly the greatest team in English history. Mm-hmm. By doing this, should they lose, it's not a given. I mean, it is the quintessential test of can a college team beat a professional team, even though they're not in the same league? You know, can Liverpool's youth team beat Shrewsbury? It'll be interesting. I mean, I don't necessarily even think it's a foregone conclusion that Shrewsbury will win. But had they won this game, you set yourself up to be have a season where you can say, like, we had one of the greatest seasons in English soccer history. We won the we competed for the treble. And you don't know if that opportunity is going to come along. And had they accomplished this feat, had they taken home the European Super Cup, the Club World Cup, the FA Cup, the Champions League, and the Premier League, I think you would have to say that that is the best team in English history. But I also understand the number of games. I remember, what was it, 2009. Manchester United won the Premier League, went to the Champions League final, won the Carabao Cup, and was in the semifinals of the FA Cup before they lost to Portsmouth, right? The year that Portsmouth won the FA Cup. And that year, I think they played close to 70 games over the course of the nine-month season, and they were within one game, that being the FA Cup final, or the FA Cup one game, of one or two games of playing, the most games that you could possibly conceivably play, well, realistically play, in English soccer history, not counting the odd replay because they didn't have any. And just how exhausted they looked by the end of that season. And I think in that respect, Klopp is right to give his team a break. But it's not often when you have when you can go back and sit and point at a choice and say this could potentially have an impact one way or the other very clearly on history.
Yeah,
and this
also
gives like the younger squad just a chance to show Klopp, to show the first team, hey, I want to be the sub, I want to be that normal sub rotation. So they're playing for bigger stuff than just for Klopp and the first team. So it is a good showing for the younger kids. Even though last game they had Lovren, whatever how you say his name, Origi, they had some first team players. They still look like crap. Even though Shrewsbury, this could be their cup final. They're playing against the number one team right now, the best in the world. So they kind of did give them all. However, I think going to Anfield, and that's such a fortress with the singing, the chanting, just the history, just all that. It might be just too much just for Shrewsbury just to even come close. I think maybe it's a money thing to give Shrewsbury some more money for their stadium or whatever. FA Cup sometimes it's kind of weird for me like that. Like how's a team like Liverpool tie? How do they go from 2-0 to 2-2 and tie a team like that? It's in the first division, 16th place or something like that. They're not that close. So I don't know if the money driven thing too somehow, but sometimes doing games like that for me seems a little fishy. So I don't know if the money driven thing, but I think Klopp has complete faith in his complete squad and his younger squad too. Again, Anfield is a fortress. I hate to say it too, but whatever. Go Arsenal.
Yeah.
Go instead.
Yeah, I see Shrewsbury going in there and just feeling the energy of the crowd. And I could actually see a lot of Liverpool supporters really being kind of fired up to see what the young boys can do. And you're playing against a team that's significantly lower in league, and you could even say that this the team that they're going to be playing, they're going to have more difficult players to play against in training than they do in this game. So the likelihood that they're going to be facing talent that does not match what they're used to facing at practice on a daily basis could easily swing the game in their favor. But, you know, the one thing I'll say about the FA Cup, probably more so than any other cup, is that this is the tournament where you see Giants fall. And you see them fall by lower-level teams, lower-league teams, all the time. It's not even a surprise. And yet it's never less enjoyable to see. I've spoken about this game a lot, but the game in Birmingham City beat Arsenal for the League Cup final and then got relegated that same season, or the game when Wigan beat Manchester City for the FA Cup final, and I believe they got relegated that year or the year after. I'm a huge fan of this opportunity for teams that aren't going to win many honors throughout their history can get a chance to just climb the ladder and see what you can do. Because, you know, one thing is they're going to go in there and they're going to play with nothing to lose. And so it could be a fun – I mean, out of all the replays, I would say that one would be the most fun to watch, mainly because of the team that Liverpool is going to be fielding.
I remember Barry Hearn, who was a former owner of Leighton Orient and a big-time events promoter, talking about how he made money playing in second and third division of English football. And he said the only season that he made money was that they got a replay at the Emirates. And he said they get, for those FA Cup, they get a sizable portion of the gate proceeds.
Mm-hmm.
So for a team like Shrewsbury going to a presumably sold out Anfield for this game, that could give them the financial wherewithal to balance their books for the remainder of the season. They could actually have a profitable season as a result of this, and this would be a big one for them.
They could even sign a couple of good people too as well. They're making a lot of money off of this stuff too. It could even pay for their whole entire payroll for the rest of the year. So
the year.
That's why I think sometimes it's money driven with these replays. Like, some of this seems kind of fishy sometimes, but that's just me being American. Who am I though?
You talked instead about how this is a tournament that can throw up the cup set, the giant killing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We really have not seen that in the first two rounds the cup. We certainly thought that maybe we had the opportunity to see one this weekend. Maybe not so much in actual stature, but the potential for a couple of teams that have been wobbling. Let's be honest. Both of our teams have been struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how you guys felt going into the game against Bournemouth. I had no idea what to make of Manchester United going down to Tranmere on Sunday and playing on that field in that stadium down there, which had one poor blade of grass about 60 yards down the field, and the rest of it was mud. I don't know if you saw any of the highlights from that game, but that field was atrocious. And Tranmere has admitted, like, the substructure underneath of their field has failed, and that there's absolutely nothing they can do. And the game had to be postponed, and their original tie had to be postponed against Watford, and played last Thursday, and then they had to turn around and play again on Sunday. As it were, it became shooting practice for Manchester United, and with the exception of Luke Shaw and Victor Lindelof, all their defenders got goals.
Definitely.
So they scored 6 goals, 3 of them were conceded by, including a magnificent top-of-the-box strike from Harry Maguire that looked like he was playing. He was actually should have been playing striker. Maybe that's the answer to the striker issue at Manchester United. We're just going to put Harry Maguire up there and let him shoot, because the way he took that goal, the swerve, how it went in, the curve, everything,
For me, it's got to be a contender for goal of the round, simply because it was a striker's goal that's taken by a center back who's not known for scoring goals with his feet. But they hit goals. Everybody basically got on the score sheet for them. Tony Martial, Jesse Lingard. Phil Jones had a goal. So Manchester United turn it over, and they run out 6-0 winners. You guys had – and the only reason I know this is because, again, we have the famous text thread, which is continues to bring me joy. But I spent a few nervy minutes from y'all two towards the end of that – the last game of the of this round between Bournemouth and Arsenal. So I'll give you guys a chance to talk about how you felt about that tie. Go ahead, Stead.
You know, it's if a team is struggling and they need a big win, play Arsenal. That seems to be that seems to have been the case on multiple occasions over the past probably 10 years. It's, you know, a team will be hitting a skid and they're like, ah, we got to climb out of this muck and we have Arsenal, and all of a sudden they either get a really, really much needed win or they're able to battle and steal a draw. It seems to happen more often than not. So when Arsenal went up 2-0, I was like, okay, this should be okay. But you're looking at a club that's struggling right now in Bournemouth, who has been in the Premier League for quite a while recently. So even if they got a late goal, you're still going, yeah, but this is a team that needs to bounce back, and they're playing against the best team you want to bounce back against, and that's Arsenal. So hopefully this – I'm glad they don't have to play a replay because I'm not sure they would have had the fortitude to handle it, even though they would have been playing that game at home, which would have been somewhat more more comfortable. But what is the bigger concern is not just it's good that Arsenal's moving on. This probably is something that maybe they can just focus on, considering that this is one tournament that they've been able to win with a relative consistency. So I don't see Europa League being an option this year from placing. So turn your attentions towards FA Cup. Hopefully some other big teams will get relatively distracted. We'll have an Arsenal Manchester United final for an FA Cup.
How sad is that? That we're so happy that we're gonna move on to the FA Cup, but we can't win for the hopefully trophy of FA Cup. Like, it's meaningless, but yet that's all we have to hold on for this, you know, for this year. Yeah, you talk about Europa, and I look at all the teams that are still in Europa. I'm looking at there's no way Arsenal is gonna even go to the quarterfinal.
No, it's done.
Like, you know, I knew they were playing today, and you know, I had like kind of this board in my classroom, like whoever Arsenal's playing next, and I, you know, put up their Bournemouth. I'm thinking, crap, it's at Bournemouth. We're not going to do well. You know, the cherries are like on crack sometimes. They go all out. Mm-hmm. You know, the energy is very high. After soccer practice at the high school, I was listening on XM radio. I'm like, holy crap, we're up 2-0. So I'm like, oh, we're up 2-0. Like, I just know that typical Arsenal just going to cough it up. And you even said, yeah, it's okay, we're up 2-0. Like, we're not like, yes, we're up 2-0. You know, the game's over. There's a question mark when we say stuff like that. And sure enough, so I came home, you know, I had my headphones on. I was walking my dog. And all of a sudden, I hear, you know, the fans in the back, you know, getting louder and louder. And all of a sudden, they scored. I'm like, what the hell? And I'm screaming in the middle of the street. I go, gosh darn it, you know, Arsenal. And sure enough, I go, this is where, you know, the cherry's going to turn around. The momentum's going to turn around. And sure enough, it sounded like they almost scored within the last 20 seconds of the game. They hit the post. And, like, that's typical Arsenal. When the you're putting away those kind of teams, they're 18th in the Premier, you know, and you're squeaking out a win. Like, how bad is it right now? It's just so bad.
Yeah,
Bournemouth's
been the worst team in the Premier League since October. They've been the worst team in the Premier League since October. So, yeah, you're exactly. Oh, the pain.
The frustration. you know, like, the fans of the show, they don't understand, but, like, every time I'm watching the game and we're up, I just know the last 10 minutes we're going to blow it somehow. And I'm on text messages, you know, screaming, swearing, blah, blah, blah. I just know, like, you know, the stress of this team is so high with me just because of just the, you know, it's going to be, we're up 1-0, we're going to lose 3-1 with the last 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
Like, this is how our season is happening.
So just foreseeing the future, like, yeah, our FA Cup is the only kind of hopes we have. And, you know, hopefully we do something in the Champions – I'm sorry, not Champions. It was my bad. In the Europa Cup, yeah. And maybe – or not even next year we can get in the Euro Cup. So it's tough right now. It sucks. It is what it is. But, man, it's a lot of lean games coming up ahead of us. So this squad, thankfully I'm a Cubs fan. I've been through many years of heartache, so I'm not, like, I see this before. I'm not super jacked up when we lose. But just, like, thank God I've been through all that heartbreak when I was growing up. That this stuff right now is just, like, yeah, whatever. But I just it's frustrating. It's frustrating as a fan. Yeah. It's frustrating to see all the money they dump into. And I love Arteta. He's going to do something great with the right squad. So I don't know if they need to get rid of some guys. And, yes, he's trying to get some of the young guys involved. And we're, like, had a decent game today and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But, like, he inherited, you know, Unai's team, which is a mixture of crap. And, you know, they signed David Luiz. And the last week they get a red card against Chelsea, David Luiz. And all of a sudden the team, like, fights more. It's like, is David Luiz the black hole of a defense? But, like, you know, even going against Chelsea last week, like, that was a completely different team. So, like, there's spurts of, like, phenomenalness, but then there's, like, oh, crap, we're about to lose against Bournemouth at Bournemouth in the last 20 seconds of the game. Like, there's so night and day with this team. And the strategy and the formation, is, I don't know, they got to get something and more cohesion. But, ugh, it's just frustrating. It really is. Yeah.
I do like the young players. I think Pepe Martinelli, Bukayo Saka, that can turn into something. So I think I'm kind of like packing in the season and looking at, you know, I don't want to say I'm happy that Mustafi's going to be injured for a while, but it's good that they're going – like he's going to be forced to start really putting some rotations in there. I wish all the best to Mustafi. I never want to wish injury on anybody. But I want to see some new players get in there. So hopefully they can just go a different direction.
You brought up a good point. Skodran Mustafi goes off with an injury that looks like it's going to be a longer-term one. Where are Arsenal going to turn? The defense has already been a bit of an issue. Where are they going to find cover at this point for
Arsenal
Mustafi?
Is scrambling right now, scrambling to get a transfer at some point. You're talking about, I think Pablo Mari's talking about that transfer coming. There's also, I could even see Granit Xhaka playing as a central defensive role. I could see him moving back. He's done that before with some relative effectiveness. I mean, he hasn't been entirely too bad. I hope he doesn't rush back the Rob Holding, Callum Chambers kind of crew who got hurt.
Letting go Ramsey last year. How's that feel now for us? You know, God, that guy would just seal up so much of this crap right now.
Exactly.
And we let him go for nothing.
Yeah. So, you know, they're scrambling to do something to just try to find a way to fill the hole. But, I mean, I can say that if anybody – I mean, I was worried about the Arteta hire mainly because I was like, because he is really young, but it looks like this guy's coming in with a lot of respect and a lot of like, and a really positive attitude and really familiar with the club, having played for Arsene Wenger as long as he had. So, you know, I think we'll see what happens by Friday. I mean, I know Arsenal wasn't going to make any transfers, but now you see that rhetoric changing pretty much immediately. So, hopefully they'll bring in someone that could at least kind of stop the bleeding. I mean, no, the defense hasn't been good all year. And so at least if they can go that route, then they will be able to, you know, in some way, I mean, they've given up 34 goals. I mean, and that's comparable to teams like Brighton and Hove and Burn. I mean,
we're minus
really,
two right now with goal difference. We're minus two and we're 10th.
Bournemouth, who's in 18th, has given up 37 goals. So it's like there's a huge issue with the defense, and I don't think the team's going to be able to climb out of it this season. I think it's just going to be try to put a piece of duct tape on it and hope that it doesn't bleed too bad.
So your reward for about making it into the round of 16 is an away trip to Fratton Park in March, where you will face what is right now pending replays, the lowest-ranked remaining team in the tournament in Portsmouth. Any concerns?
So you're saying there's a chance. All right.
Yeah.
I will say it'll be nice to see a game, a televised game back at Fratton Park. which
yeah,
we talked about before, is basically a bandbox. So Arsenal don't have to really worry about being spread out too much by Portsmouth simply because there's not enough room in the stadium to actually do that. If your defense lines up 10 yards away from each other, they're going to be playing in the, sitting in the first row of the stands.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
But again, it's Arsenal. You just never know who's going to show up. So someone might have a hangnail in their big toe they can't play, or they kick a ball wrong because it hurts their foot. It just, it's Arsenal, the squad, man. Anything is possible.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you know,
the rest
it,
of the
and
draw,
it's also Portsmouth has won a couple of games recently, you know, so you never know. They may come out and they know how to play in this tournament. So we'll see what they do. I'm not holding my breath. I'll put it that way.
There are
the Phoenix is right by me.
There are some. There really isn't in this round. Pending replays, depending on the outcome of the Shrewsbury Liverpool game, you could get Chelsea and Liverpool, which looks to and. Spurs and Southampton will play Norwich City. Those seem to be the only Premier League ties remaining. Other than that, Manchester City traveled to Hillsborough to play Sheffield Wednesday. Again, haven't seen a lot of Sheffield recently. It'll be nice to see them in a potentially televised matchup.
Agreed.
But even Tottenham is about to get rid of Eriksen, which is going to be a huge cognitive machine and everything to, I think, Inter or AC Milan.
Mm-hmm.
Like almost now, you know, and that's a huge shakeup. So they got rid of their coach this year, and they got rid of Eriksen, like two some big players in, on their team, big squad members. So even that, Southampton might be kind of like, you know, licking their chops, like, holy crap, we might have a chance to beat Tottenham. And how does that play out with Tottenham the rest of the year? And that's always good to see that.
Southampton, Ralph Hasenhuttl, they're the biggest gainers in the Premier League right now. How they've moved up to the table. So that one's far from a foregone conclusion. So Sheffield Wednesday, Man City, either Reading or Cardiff play Sheffield United. I talked about Chelsea, Liverpool. West Brom has Newcastle United or Oxford United in West Brom. Leicester City will get either Covington or Birmingham City in Leicester. This one gets really interesting. Northampton Town, who are in the fourth division, the lowest ranking team left in the tournament, or Derby County will play Manchester United. So either Manchester United will travel to the stadium of the lowest ranking team left in the tournament, or they'll get a rematch against or the reintroduction to Wayne Rooney. I don't know how to feel about that, because that could be potentially the most interesting storyline remaining in this tournament.
Mm-hmm.
But so those games will be played the week of the 2nd of March. So I think that's about enough on the FA Cup. Meanwhile, over in Europe, Barcelona lost this weekend to Valencia.
Mm-hmm.
It has not gone
Valencia.
Well for Quique Setién since taking over. They struggled against a lower division team in their game again earlier last week. In the Copa del Rey, and then this loss.
Ibiza.
Yeah, they struggled at Ibiza. They lost this one. Maybe we weren't wrong when we talked about the potential downturn, I want to say. I think demise is overrated, but downturn, fall away of Barcelona.
Mm-hmm. Well, remember, I mean, even the week before that, the game against Granada, they had to get a late, 76-minute goal from after a red card. So, you're right. I mean, all is not well over there. And now the Aubameyang rumors have been going along for quite a while, and it seems like those are about to be true. So, they think they're struggling to score goals. They're just not feeling very confident in their offense right now. Sounds like Suarez is out, and so they're looking for Aubameyang, Griezmann, Messi pairing or coupling, I should say, up the top of for their attack. But you know, it's talk to me if they get passed by Sevilla. You know, I don't think they should really be panicking too much yet. I mean, see what happens. I mean, they really need to win the league again. Well, of course they do, but you know, I think they're gonna have their sights set on Champions League again. So you know, you'll see what happens to the battle between them and Real Madrid. But it looks like it's still a two-team race, and you know, if they get two good weekends, then this conversation's moot.
But also, they've only lost three games all year. It's not like a major like down team. Mm-hmm. But watching them, they do not look like Barcelona from old. You know,
no,
like this
don't.
Coach,
they don't
yeah,
look
like
it, he's
okay.
Right about that. You're exactly right about that.
But a big team like that, or Man U, or even Bayern, you don't really get managers from a lower tier in your division or an upper tier from another division or a lower division. I mean, like he's from Real Betis or whatever. Like that's a mid-range team. Like I don't know, Barcelona. I see you get a really good coach from another league or someone in your league, top five, top six. So I don't know why they picked that team. They were looking at him a couple of years ago, or was it last year or 2 years ago? But he doesn't really have a great record. So is it the system and that he incorporated in the last couple of games, or is it everything, you know, the players and the coach, that one of those bad years? But they've only lost a couple of games, and they're only 3 points behind Real Madrid. And Real Madrid is not the same Real Madrid as from years past as well. So is it a down year, or let's down 2 years in La Liga? Don't know, but they're not horribly bad to even make this guy a scapegoat yet. And everything I'm reading on the news, why is this guy our coach? This guy should be out of here. He's only had three games right now. He's like 2-0-1 mm-hmm. right now. Again, it's just really weird that they actually hired him. But I don't pay him his money, so whatever.
They will travel this midweek to bottom of the table. Well, 19th place, Leganes, for a Copa del Rey match. Then they've got Levante, Betis, Getafe, who's in fourth, and Eibar, before they go to Napoli in the Champions League, who are also a team that's in their own form of crisis. I say that to mm-hmm. say it is setting up outside of the game against Getafe to be a relatively straightforward run leading up to the March 1st Clásico in the Bernabeu, which for all intents and purposes could likely be the La Liga decider. I agree. We talked about it at length after the hiring, that this was kind of an odd one. Mm-hmm. So back stateside, we had an important introduction this week. Chicharito Hernandez is going to be playing in MLS. is this not like the most LA Galaxy move ever? Picking up this guy. And to say he started off, he had a great start to his career at Manchester United, and he was scoring goals for fun. It sort of tailed off after Sir Alex Ferguson left. He had some injury problems. He bounced around Italy, Spain. Now he's back playing in the MLS. He made
Germany.
The joke about basically being getting ready for retirement, which didn't go over well. But this is kind of like the LA Galaxy move. Let's win the summer in MLS. We'll get the big name. And again, fulfills a designated player role. He's going to be a popular player in LA. It gives them an answer to Carlos Vela. And it actually gives us something to talk about with regards to MLS and the transfer window, which last time we spoke that was something that we were saying, like, really, like, the offseason for the MLS has been extremely quiet because
mm-hmm.
there's nobody to talk to because there's no name.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, what are your thoughts on this?
We discuss a lot about ways to build the MLS brand and from a financial perspective and trying to get more eyes on the game And even the lay sports fan or the lay soccer fan may have heard of Chicharito, especially as a good player for Manchester United for, you know, a number of years. But he also has the catchy nickname, and he writes it on the back of his shirt. And, you know, and he's a handsome guy, you know. And at least on the West Coast, you can really see this could be a good kind of pairing of the rivalry between him and Carlos Vela. You know, with the Mexican population over there, you have two of the biggest Mexican soccer stars that are going to be playing on rival teams in, you know, in L.A., which is still a very Mexican city. So at least from that perspective, it's a smart move for L.A. Galaxy. It is a very L.A. Galaxy thing to do. You know, if they're looking to replace the buzz of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, they should just know that is impossible because Zlatan can only have buzz like Zlatan. I'm just trying to think of a Zlatan-like phrase as I'm saying this, but in the end, I think though I'm not going to poo-poo the move. I think it's rather wise, and it has us talking about it, and it has me actually interested. I was like, oh, okay, cool. I'm glad he's coming.
No,
I know they've been talking about that move for a number of years, so I can honestly say that I'm glad he's in the MLS.
But even like you said, Mike,
you know, he's close to retiring.
Well, he's close to retiring, so everyone that comes who's at the Twilights, they come to the MLS. So, like you asked before, how can they build this brand? Stop buying or stop, you know, renting, if you want to say, these old people. Yeah, they have names like Rooney and stuff like that. You're bringing the money in, but are you not keeping the fan base here, though? Like Zoltan, like, yeah, they want to come to see him, but now he's gone, and okay, whatever, I don't want to go see soccer again. Rooney's in D.C., all right, cool, now he's gone, all right, whatever. Like, they don't really have big names to stay here, to keep here, because they're all old. And, yeah, it's definitely an L.A. Move, and you get the, you know, Mexican population down there that, you know, bring money. But he's got, what, 2-3 years, and that's it. You can't really build MLS when you're having these 2-3 year, you know, megastars coming over at the twilights of their careers. It doesn't make sense. And that's one thing I don't think MLS will ever be big until they start just having the young kids to kind of take over the league, let them grow. Maybe it might take a year or two for this to develop. But when you're just getting all these old farts coming over here, it's not going to help the brand by any means. And another reason why I don't like MLS is just they have their heads up, just looking for money, and that's about it. Not the longevity of the sport, not the popularity of the sport, just the money for right now. It's a good move for LA Galaxy for 2 years, and that's it. Yeah, so you're going to play the fan base over there with both the teams, but overall, you're not building anything. You're not taking away, you're not building. And that's the whole point of having a sports league, especially MLS, when you're trying to compete with, you know, European or even Central or Latin American leagues. It's so hard when you're just not really advancing. You know, I'm an MLS hater, so I'll throw it out there for all the fans to know as well.
I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate because I was looking through some of the off-season moves, and especially for Philadelphia Union, who are, you know, I was a former season ticket holder. They're my hometown team. And I was looking at the players that they brought in, and for the most part, I have no clue who these people are. And I've said it before, unless you have nothing to do but scour YouTube for highlights from random South American and Central American leagues, a lot of times these players that are coming in, the younger ones, you just don't know who they are. And it's hard to get excited for them because you have no idea who this person is. And you have no idea how they're going to fit into the team. And I don't understand what I'm actually looking at when I look at this roster. Is it going to be good? Is it going to be bad? And so it's hard to get excited going into the season when you have absolutely no idea what you're going to be looking at. And how do you market a player that pretty much nobody really has ever heard of before? But, and that's not to say that these guys aren't good. Like, really, I don't know how many people knew about Miguel Almirón before, or Josef Martínez before they got to Atlanta United. I know a few people who knew who Ezequiel Barco was, but those are just the people who play FIFA on the PlayStation because he was one of the promising young players that everybody liked to buy in career mode. The funny thing is, the two that we didn't know
were the two that turned out to be successful. The one that everybody got hyped about was the one that turned out not to be. I say that to say that I feel like you need to mix in these sort of Chicharito Hernandez type signings because they do bring eyes to the game. The more casual fan who can go down there and say, I don't know who a lot of these guys are, but I know who Wayne Rooney is. So I'm going to go down and I'm going to go see Wayne Rooney. Oh, guess what? I found out Audi Field is kind of cool. This whole soccer thing ain't bad. Maybe I'll come back and watch it some more. In that respect, I think that these signings are necessary because you have to have somebody who people want to see, or else, you know, you're just
keep the league alive.
Yeah, you're just marketing the guys like us, and we'll probably go down and watch the games anyway because we just like soccer and that's what we do.
But teams like Man U, Liverpool, and the big boys, they have their scouts down in South America, Central America. They're already pulling those boys at age 8, 9 and bring them into their academy. That's why we really don't see them. That, you know, we get like the leftovers coming back up in MLS. Like, all right, cool. You might thrive in MLS and you might go somewhere else. But all the good boys, again, they're boys when they're getting contracted. They're already in the field. They're already in the U14s, U16s, all that stuff. In Man U and Liverpool and all those in Barcelona, all their squads. So it's kind of hard to build a league like that when we're bringing up these no-namers. I'm like, all right, cool, we'll watch them. And, oh, cool, this one's a good-looking guy. He's fast, and that's about it. They just kind of water it down, I feel, here in America.
Can I jump in real quick? I just don't think that MLS has much of a choice. If you compare it to, as we've seen, basketball has become a very global game, and there's still the pinnacle league of the NBA, which everyone's trying to get to, and then there of course there's other kind of spatterings of leagues throughout Europe. But you're never going to get the player like Luka Doncic is not going to stay there. He's going to go to where the biggest league is, the best contracts and everything like that. And until MLS actually has the funds that can entice some player like that to want to stay, it's just not going to happen. So I think if you can do anything to just get butts in seats and get I think it's actually beneficial for them to do these because guys
like
us who kind of know the game a bit more, who will say, I don't like MLS because it's like the soccer is not up to the level that I enjoy watching. Fair enough, I totally understand that. If there's a recognizable player though that happens to come to the stadium, you might go and check it out. And as Mike was saying, you go into Audi Field or you go into some of the newer soccer stadiums and you go, oh, this is actually pretty cool. This is all right. And you have to spend a whole lot of money. Okay, yeah, I might come back here and watch a couple more games also because I'm just a fan of the sport. So hopefully that is what will stick so that can get more people to tune into the game so we have more opportunities for like a Joseph Martinez or a Miguel Almiron who can come in and actually be a player that's recognized on even at a small level is recognized on the world stage as a competent player and can be a top player in the MLS. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. And I will say this, like, look at what Zlatan did. You can't doubt that he wasn't successful in the MLS because he was very successful, even at 37.
But he's a one of a kind. I also, you talk about the best contracts and stuff like that.
Agreed.
Guys play hockey to win the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Guys play football to play in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
People play soccer to play in the Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
Or in Europe. Europe. They want to play
It's still Champions League. You're thinking of Clint Dempsey when he had that one good year at Fulham and he ran to a potential Champions League team as quickly as he could. And nobody blamed him for it. That's what you're supposed to do.
Or players like Paul Pogba saying, I want to leave Manchester United because I want to play in the Champions League. And that's what my aspirations are.
Mm.
We don't have that over here. How are you going to entice a player, no matter, unless it's you just play way over the odds, but how are you going to entice and could you even keep said player if the most that you have to offer them is the opportunity to win the Lamar Hunt Trophy and lift MLS Cup?
And even the U.S. Players, they're going over to Europe and they're staying over in Europe. They're not even coming back here to play in the MLS until their twilight years, So even American kids aren't really buying into the MLS. So it's so hard just to even have those people to buy into the system to make the fan base, bigger. Soccer is just weird here in America. It's just the latest sport I feel like it got popular. Competing with baseball, football, hockey. Even though women's soccer, I think, sometimes draw more just because they're winning, it's a different kind of feel. But, I don't know, man. It just seems like as a kid, you want to go to Europe. That's where all the best competition is. That's where the best clubs are, the best training facilities, the best coaches, all this stuff. And America here is kind of the leftovers. A lot of college kids stay here in America. They just play in the MLS for a couple of years, and that's it. If you're good, you're going overseas. You're not really staying around here.
I don't think any kid dreams of playing in their backyard scoring the winning goal in the MLS finals for the Seattle Sounders. I've never heard anybody say that.
I agree.
Nobody's sitting there saying, I'm Chris Wondolowski, right? Not that he was a bad player. And that's because, and I think that I bring that to kind of wrap up the discussion by saying, the MLS is what the MLS is. And rather than wanting it to be something, let's enjoy the fact that we have a successful league over in the United States that doesn't look to be going anywhere, that draws talent, even if it is at the end of their careers, that we get an opportunity to see in a relatively comfortable, fun environment for not a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And along the way, you get to see somebody who may develop into a good young player down the road. I don't think that we could ever compete with Europe as a league. I think it would be nice if we could compete with Liga MX, but even that's doubtful.
Yeah.
And but let's kind of be realistic. And by we, I mean the fans and the powers that be at MLS. Let's be realistic about who we are and what we can be. Don't set your sights on global domination. Don't try and say that we expect LA Galaxy to become a bigger brand than Barcelona or Real Madrid or Manchester United, that we believe that our league can compete with the Premier League. You can't. You're not going to. It's not going to happen. Those guys have had over 100 years of practice doing this, and we have 25.
At least we're better than Canada.
Yeah. Let's be the best league. Let's be the best league in North America. Let's be the best league in the CONCACAF region. Let's be the best league potentially in this hemisphere. I don't see why they couldn't compete with, the Brazilian league or the Argentinian league, because as big as those leagues are, there's not a lot of money, and we've seen how those competitions can go. I think they need to be realistic about who they are and what they are. And that's why I don't mind this Chicharito Hernandez signing. That's why I don't mind the Latan signing when they come over. It gives us something to talk about. It gives us something to get excited about. It gives us somebody who we actually know that we can go and see and enjoy. And, maybe I'll see Luciano Acosta and he'll become something. Maybe I'll see a Mark McKenzie who could become a starting defender for the U.S. men's national team along the way. But if it's me going out to see Javier Hernandez or Chicharito is why I'm going out there, I got no problem with it.
Agreed, yeah. I'm in the same boat. Mm. And, I think having gone to a fair amount of games at Audi Field recently, even during the Rooney run, even when they were good and when he was clearly, nine toes out the door, It was enjoyable. It was enjoyable. And it was one of those moments where I can say, I was at that was a special little run they went on to qualify for the playoffs a couple of years ago. That was, that was a big MLS story. And I can say that I saw that. And that was something that I'll always be happy that I was able to watch.
So as we look forward to the week that is coming up, we've got did you know that there's a USA friendly on Saturday?
Yes. And I mean,
I say that to say, yeah, it is our mid-February domestic training camp friendly against Costa Rica. Neither one of the teams is really going to be playing their first choice team. It's interesting. You can see a couple of the young kids. I know there's a couple of guys from the Philadelphia Union on there, and a fair few from. Most of them are, almost all of them, I believe, are lower league youth players from Europe and domestic-based players. But that's coming up on Friday afternoon. And of course, the Bundesliga and the leagues in Europe are in full force. But it is a surprisingly I want to say untantalizing, light slate of fixtures, it looks like, throughout Europe. Is there anything in particular that you are looking forward to watching, Coach Matt, this coming week? Or not Coach Matt, Coach G.
Oh, man. Coach G, nothing really. I just want to see good soccer. I even like bottom scrub teams playing against each other just for a point or 3 points. Sometimes those are the better games than the top-tier teams. I'm a soccer guy through and through. It doesn't matter. As long as the soccer game's on, I'm actually watching a documentary right now on Sky Sports talking about whatever. I can't even hear him, but they have Thierry Henry and Ozil uniforms in the back. It doesn't matter. If it's soccer, I'm watching it. So any good sport, man, any good soccer games, that's all I'm about. Nothing in particular, sir.
Mr. Stead, what you got?
I think we got a couple of games that are going to be interesting. If you're interested in La Liga at all, you have Atletico playing Real Madrid this weekend at 10
on
Saturday.
I did forget about that one.
Yeah, that's
an and Diego Simeone's got some work to do for him at Atletico.
Absolutely.
The shine has come a little bit off the start. You know what this reminds me a lot of? Diego Simeone right now in his position at Atletico reminds me a lot of Jurgen Klopp towards the end of his tenure at Dortmund, where you know you keep year after year selling your best player year after year and expecting them to come in, and the replacement parts don't always fit immediately.
And
I still have confidence that João Felix is going to come good. I just think he's like 21 years old and not exactly working for him.
But I will say, though, I think in the Premier League, though, I mean, we can't forget, though, that places 5 through 14 are only separated by 4 points. So the logjam that we discussed earlier in the year is still alive and well. It's just, you know, it's outside of the Champions League spots, but you're seeing teams that are as low as 14 are still only two good weekends away from being, from them and bad weekends from everybody else, of being a top half team. So, but I think the game of the weekend to actually watch is not going to be Spurs Man City, but it's going to be Man United Wolves. That's the game I think is going to be the best.
Leicester Chelsea.
I'm still going to go with Man U Wolves. I think the Leicester Chelsea game is going to be two teams that are going to say, we're both solidly in the top four. Let's just not go out there and do anything stupid. We're not going to catch Liverpool. Let's just make sure we stay where we are. I could totally see that happening. And I could see a 1-1 draw in that game. But I could see Man U Wolves being the game to watch.
I'm going to shade slightly towards Spurs City or Leicester Chelsea simply because Frank Lampard needs to get a point. He's taken three since the turn of the year. You know, Spurs, I'm concerned how they're going to score. Without anybody being able to score goals for Manchester United, I have seen this Wolves game three times since the beginning of the year. This will be the third time I've seen this. You know,
they played in the FA Cup.
So they played each other quite a few times. And in the two times that they played each other, there has been one goal. And since they played this will be the fourth time that they've played this season, right? And there have been in those games a combined three goals. They drew the first one. and they scored more. So, yes, it's two evenly matched teams, but it's two evenly matched teams that almost in a way offensively cancel each other out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
So, and it's not even one of those ones where they offensively cancel each other out and it leads to a really thrilling nil-nil draw. They almost, because of the way they play, they cancel each other out and they almost negate each other to the point where you just, you don't see those types of offensive forays. So I think in actually watching it, it's going to be such a tactical match that it might turn out to be a little bit dire. That being said, it'll probably end up 4-4. So, right up against it. I want to thank you, gentlemen. I want to thank producer Paul for keeping trains running, and of course our sponsor, Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cornell Avenue. We did awful this week. We'll try and even do worse next week. Thanks a lot, gentlemen.